This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, August 17th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, students in Boulder County return to their classrooms this week. But what will back-to-school look like this year? We'll have a guest on from the Boulder Valley School District. And we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. Today on How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show tours Boulder's Shelby American Collection to look for ways that world-class racing cars sparked automotive innovation. We'll also hear about the new Colorado app for displaying a vaccination record. At 9 a.m., it's the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative. 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines with Stacey Johnson.
A declaration by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation given yesterday orders Arizona to cut the water it draws from Lake Mead by 18%, Nevada by 7%, and the nation of Mexico by 5%, with the cuts beginning next year. According to the Denver Post, as the first ever mandatory water cuts are imposed on Arizona, Nevada, and Mexico, states higher up on the Colorado River are facing rising pressure to divert less to meet legal downriver obligations. The Denver Post reports Colorado officials have embarked on an effort to install measuring devices across the western slope to precisely account for how much water farmers, ranchers, and municipalities siphon out. Colorado is also developing a program to pay farmers, industries, and municipalities to use less of their allocated shares of river water. Outside consultant investigators, which include former police leaders and civil rights experts, issued a report yesterday recommending the Aurora Police Department implement close to 50 changes. According to the Denver Post, one of the report's more forceful recommendations is for the police department to overhaul and improve its disciplinary process. The investigators found that 35 officers accounted for 40% of misconduct investigations between 2017 and 2020, with 12 of those officers responsible for nearly a quarter of the misconduct allegations. Investigators also found that between 2017 and 2020, it took an average of 201 days, or nearly 7 months, for a disciplinary case to close, and the department's release of information about serious misconduct has varied significantly over those 3 years. The consultants also urged the department to strengthen and streamline its use of force policies. Children across Colorado will head back to school in the coming days, but that doesn't include children younger than kindergarten. Parents have no right to universal pre-care nor daycare for their kids, and according to a new report from the Colorado Sun, nearly half of all Coloradans live in a daycare desert. Steve Miller has more.
The shortage of licensed child care has increased as the pandemic devastated underfunded providers and forced many parents to quit their jobs to watch their kids. The Colorado Sun reports that daycare operators are struggling to hire staff, and many parents feel they have no options. Critical jobs may go unfulfilled, deterring economic growth after a year and a half of coronavirus restrictions. Child care is now over $27,000 a year, but with demanding regulatory requirements, most child care centers struggle to hire workers. Centers that do find a qualified applicant say it can take months to hire them because a state background check system has been backlogged. In resort towns like Steamboat in Root County, the situation is particularly dismal. Increased housing costs, driven by an influx of wealthy second home buyers during the pandemic, are making it harder for families with one parent staying home with their child to make resort town rent on a single income. The Office of Early Childhood says that Colorado is prepared to provide, by 2023, every four-year-old at least 10 hours a week of pre-kindergarten, and as close as $600 million in federal funding is coming in to help stabilize child care. The funding will be distributed starting this fall, but for now, the struggle continues. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Colorado's two independent redistricting commissions are split over how to count incarcerated people in their proposed maps. On a 10-2 vote, Colorado's independent legislative redistricting commission passed a measure last Friday that will count inmates using their last known address rather than the location where they are imprisoned. The day before, Colorado's Independent Congressional Redistricting Commission was short of the 8 votes needed to make a process change and will continue using an inmate's prison address. According to the Colorado's Newsline, prison inmates have historically been counted by the U.S. Census Bureau in the county of where they are incarcerated. In Colorado, prisons are typically in counties that are rural and less diverse, whereas prison populations are disproportionately made up of people of color. Reform advocates argue that counting the state's 14,000-plus inmates at their prison location skews a rural county's population, resulting in more political power and federal funding allocations. The Colorado General Assembly passed legislation in 2020 requiring incarcerated individuals to be counted at their last known address, but a Colorado Supreme Court opinion earlier this year said it's unconstitutional for lawmakers to dictate the redistricting process as voters remove lawmakers from the process with Amendments Y and Z. If today's weather is deemed suitable, Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks will operate a helicopter until 5 p.m. to help construct and maintain some of its trails in West Boulder. Trails in the Unanominy Hill and Red Rocks area between Sunshine Canyon and Boulder Canyon will be closed, although the Sunshine Canyon Trail will be open, and visitors can access a detour trail around the east side of the Red Rock Trail. In addition, the Bear Peak West Ridge and Green Bear Trails will be closed during the helicopter work. The helicopter is slated to move construction materials for the Unanominy Hill Trail and will do improvements and repairs for the Royal Arch and the First and Second Flatiron Trails. Information on trail closure is available at osmptrails.org. Suncor Energy has launched an air monitoring system online that will track the emissions from the refinery located in Commerce City. According to the Denver Gazette, the new monitoring system is part of the company's efforts to gain the community's trust after a 2020 settlement with state health regulators over air pollution violations. The system's data comes from 8 collection stations around Commerce City, and Suncor will soon deploy a mobile van to track emissions. Data from the air monitoring dashboard is available to the public at ccnd-air.com. Today's forecast by the National Weather Service predicts Boulder to be sunny with a high near 93 with a 10% chance of showers and thunderstorms occurring after 3 p.m. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low around 62. Denver will also be sunny with a high near 95 with a 10% chance of storms occurring after 3 p.m. Tonight's low for Denver will be around 64 degrees. The Colorado Department of Health and Environment has issued an ozone action alert for the Denver Metro counties and the counties of Boulder, Weld, and Larimer. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 67 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Students and teachers across Boulder County returned to the classrooms this week, some starting Wednesday, others on Thursday. Unfortunately, the back-to-school scenario isn't as post-pandemic as many of us were hoping just a few short weeks ago. The Delta variant is fueling a rise in COVID cases across the country, and local school districts from Denver to Boulder have been finding it difficult to staff school bus routes. For more on what this year's return to classes has in store, I'm joined by Randy Barber, Boulder Valley School District's Chief Communications Officer. Welcome and thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
First, let's start with the pandemic. What protocols are in place this year and when it comes to prevention and mitigation measures?
Absolutely. You know, as you said, the pandemic isn't over. Unfortunately, I think we all hoped as we went into the summer and were able to take off our masks that we would be able to continue that into schools. But that really hasn't been the case. As we look at the situation, our health partners really feel strongly that health precautions are still needed. And so as we return back to school, our main focus is really having students back in person 5 days a week and trying to make sure that we do everything that we can so that we don't have to hold them out for quarantines or an outbreak or whatever, that kind of thing. So as students come back starting tomorrow, and again, we are so excited to have them back in the classroom, we will be asking everyone, staff, students, and anybody that comes into the building to wear masks. When they go outside, they won't have to do that. They can take their mask off if they choose. But again, we'll honor anybody's decision. If they want to keep that mask on all day long, that's up to them. And then additionally, we'll be doing many of the things, you know, it will look very much like it did last year in a lot of ways. We'll be asking kids to wash their hands on a frequent basis. We'll be trying to keep kids in groups so that making sure that we're keeping track of where they sit in the rooms and that kind of stuff, so that if there is a positive case, that we're able to quickly determine who needs to be held out and who might need to be looking for symptoms, that kind of thing. Some of our protocols have changed. Our health partners have changed the way that they're going to do quarantines this time around. Again, with a preference of trying to keep kids in school. And so close contact, someone that isn't positive yet or doesn't have symptoms, won't be asked to stay home, but they'll be asked to watch for symptoms. They'll be notified and be doing that. Whereas if you've got a positive case or you are exhibiting symptoms, you'll be asked to stay home and isolate.
And what about regular testing of students?
That's a great question. We are continuing our efforts in that regard. We still have our community center over at, that's through COVID Check Colorado, that's over at Centaurus High School. And so anybody in the community, including staff and students, it's free for them. But anybody in the community can go out and get a swab, a nasal swab, and it's the best test that's available in that way. And then we'll also have two mobile testing sites that will be rotating through our schools. We noticed that our secondary schools, specifically our high schools, were not really utilizing the test sites as much. So we really focused our attention on elementary and middle school sites. And so every 2 weeks, if a parent opts in, they can have their kid tested, make sure that they're okay, doing all right. And then additionally, if anybody, feels like they might be symptomatic and want to check themselves out, they're welcome. We'll have that list online and they can actually go and come to that site on that day. Again, anybody in our system will be able to do that.
And how can parents opt into this this sample pool?
Messaging will be going out. It will be similar to last year, where they'll just choose that they want to opt in, and then their school will have that list every time it comes back up again. So we'll be just starting that as we go back tomorrow.
And as far as masking indoors, there's one place where students probably will be taking off their masks. And I'm just wondering about this: is inside the cafeterias when it's lunchtime? Are lunches being moved outdoors, or how is that going to work?
Again, very similar to last year, our protocols are to try to keep spacing with students there. So not having students sit, directly opposed to each other. But, certainly, we know that today it's very beautiful outside. We want, as students come back, if they can take advantage of that, take their lunch outside, we'll be encouraging that. But as it gets snowier and smokier and all those things that might happen that force kids inside, at that point, we will be using that same protocol that we had last year, which encourages spacing. But you are right. They will be in a room where they're taking off their mask. And so we do recognize that there's a little bit more risk in that environment.
And you mentioned that the testing sites weren't really all that utilized at high schools. Are there any special measures in place for middle schools where there's a likelihood of more age-based overlap between students who are vaccinated and those who are not yet qualified to get vaccinated because of age?
So they very much are like the elementary students. All testing will be available to them. I wouldn't say that there's anything additional, much like elementary students. Yes, you're correct. A lot of them aren't able to get vaccinated. And so we'll be, making sure that we're watching that. The other thing that happens with secondary students is that they do typically, when you think about like a kindergarten site, the kids are all playing together in close contact. And typically, as you get into secondary levels, they do have, sort of natural spacing that happens. Kids aren't in each other's space quite as much. But we still recognize that there's, as kids congregate in halls and that kind of stuff. So teachers will be encouraging, to keep social distancing to the point possible, but without requiring, like 6 foot distance or something along those lines.
Now back to lunches. Like last year, the district is offering free meals to all students, but at the same time, urging families who do qualify for free and reduced price lunch to fill out the paperwork. Why is it important to get that paperwork in if kids will have access to free lunches anyway?
That opportunity, when you put in for that benefit, when you go for free and reduced lunch, it allows you to then access a lot of other services. And you don't have to, but if you're a family that's in need, relieves you of having to pay certain fees. It can really open a lot of other doors. But again, that process has actually been changed a little bit this year, in which we're going to be asking families to specifically designate if they do qualify for that free and reduced lunch, which again is the gateway. You know, if they do that, then that kind of opens up these opportunities. But then once they've done that, you know, are these other things that they would like to take advantage of? And so parents may that have been, you know, taking advantage of this in the past may see this and realize that we've had a little bit of a change there. But it's a very big benefit for families that just don't have the money to pay for things like school supplies or, you know, for athletic fees or that kind of thing.
And it's not just for the families themselves. Isn't it also tied to federal funding that comes into the school district?
That's right. Thank you for bringing that up. You're absolutely correct. Those numbers are absolutely used as we're getting federal funding. They provide the school district and specifically schools with additional money to be able to take care of the needs of students that are in need. And so it's very, very, very beneficial. Again, it feels like one of those kind of things where if you're already getting the free lunch, why do this? But for your own family, and for the school district to be able to better serve students, it's a huge, 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 huge thing for us to have people go ahead and apply for that. And I would say too that it's kept confidential. That's one of the big efforts that, you know, we've always had that philosophy, but this year more than ever, we're really trying to make sure that everyone knows that, you know, when you put your information in there, it's not then shared within the school community, that it's secret, that you've got that additional help.
And I would just add that for families who may not have broadband at home, the free and reduced lunch letter of approval is also valid for applying for emergency broadband benefits to be able to be connected at home. Last month, we had a couple of representatives on from the transportation division. They were telling us about a school bus driver shortage. Has that been resolved, or is the shortage and the recruiting efforts ongoing?
We still have a shortage, and we're still working on recruiting additional bus drivers. But the good news is that we've been able to recruit enough bus drivers that we're not having to see, you know, really critical outages or having to take away services for students across the district. Throughout the summer, as you may know, we really did an effort to have students identify if they still needed the transportation for the school year. We let them know that we were facing this crisis. And I think a lot of families also stepped up knowing that we were facing that and allowed families that really had more need to be able to get the services. And so we're still able to serve all of our schools. We have had to, you know, really look at things like, you know, in the past we had students that were outside of our normal circle. So if you're more than 2 miles, that's when you're usually eligible for transportation. We had a couple situations, you know, that in history we had allowed it because there were unsafe routes into school or those kind of things. We had to really look at those as well. And so we know that we're working with some of our communities that are now not inside the walk or are inside back into the walk zone to make sure that, you know, that they're able to get their kids to school safely, that this is a new thing. If they were usually riding the bus, that they have other alternate ways to be able to do that, or maybe help like a crossing guard in order to ease their fears, at least in this first initial year of walking back to school.
Is there anything else listeners should know before classes start tomorrow?
Oh, goodness. Again, our focus is having kids back in class. You know, when we looked at last year, the ability to have kids in person with their teachers was crucial. You know, those are those social interactions between the teacher, between students, the peers, having that ability to really, you know, see where there might be struggling. It's hard to do that through a computer. And so to have them in person, I can't tell you how important that is. That's where our focal point is. And, you know, for folks that are, you know, concerned, we still have those health precautions to make sure that everybody is safe. But a lot of this is going to return back to normal for the reason that we know that it's best for kids. Some people have asked us, you know, why not continue hybrid for those that want that kind of service? We just, that really stretched teachers in a way that wasn't really healthy. You know, trying to take care of kids that were online and in person just was not a good scenario. It was not best practice. You know, it was a good try, something that we had to do during a crisis, but we're glad to be back to normal, back into a normal situation.
Randy Barber, Chief Communications Officer at BVSD, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much again.
And when we come back, we will listen to the listener comment line. But first, a quick promo of what's coming up on tonight's Hemispheres.
Tonight on Hemispheres, the International Press Roundtable. This evening, the Roundtable team will bring the KGNU listener coverage of international news not often heard in the corporate mainstream media. That's tonight on Hemispheres and the International Press Roundtable.
And now we check in with KGNU's comment line when we hear what's on the minds of listeners.
My name is Ellen Fisk. Thank you, KGNU, for putting in Counterspin. It was just excellent this Monday morning on how our media is controlled by corporate entities and that how the truth is so distorted, and it was very well done. Thank you.
Hi, this is Marty calling to thank KGNU for airing Robin Clare's Tributaries program on Sunday, August 8th. The topic was exploring theories in healthcare with a focus on contagious diseases. Robin's guest offered some unique information regarding the causes of diseases such as smallpox, measles, leprosy, and of course COVID, with a focus on challenging the contagion theory. I found this refreshing since it was clearly out of the mainstream information we hear incessantly from the media, especially regarding COVID. And sadly, I've been very disappointed over the past year and a half that KGNU's coverage of COVID is exactly the same information that is broadcast on corporate media, such as NBC, CNN, or even Fox. I also find it disturbing when ideas that in the past were called controversial are now labeled as misinformation or even disinformation that should actually be censored, as one of your callers to the comment line said about Robin's show. Whatever happened to opposing viewpoints? Whatever happened to the give and take of the scientific process? What happened to listeners having access to information that challenges us to be critical thinkers? KGNU's mission statement says that it, quote, seeks to stimulate and educate its audience and provide a channel for issues that have been overlooked, suppressed, or underrepresented by other media. I felt Robin's program did just that.
Yes, hi, my name is James, and I am calling in raving praise Robin Clare's Tributaries program. I re-listened to the health program that aired a couple weeks ago, and I was enlightened even more. The negative calls on the comment line recently motivated me to give it a deeper listening to see if there was something that I missed. But no, my support for Robin and her excellent program has been reinforced by that listening again. A phrase that I heard somewhere along the lines on KGNU is, the opposite of fear is curiosity. I invite those other callers to be curious, to grow, to seek fully to understand, and to stop the bullying. I appreciate their passion, but it's problematic, and it must stop. Again, kudos to Robin with that excellent program. I invite others to check it out again. Thank you. Bye.
It's 6:30 on Saturday morning, and I would love to be listening to Honky Tonk Heroes. I support Honky Tonk Heroes. I love Honky Tonk Heroes. And since you have your new app, I'm no longer able to listen to Honky Tonk Heroes. I was in this office the other day, and I paid you money, and a lot of people looked at my phone, and they said, oh, somebody who knows about these things will contact you. Somebody contacted me, but it wasn't the person they said, and he didn't know any more than the other people, and I still don't have KGNU. I'm very disappointed. And I'm not sorry I'm sending you money to support you. I'm just sorry I'm not able to enjoy the show. My name is Jay Thomas. But I don't need to talk to you if you're just going to tell me what the other people told me, because I'm telling you again, the KGNU app does not download. It just spins round and round and round and round and round and round and round, and it never plays any music or makes any noise at all.
Yes, I'd like to say I really appreciate Frank Dubofsky's interviews with various people in our local politics and comments on what's going on in the community. He does a really nice job of bringing out some of the issues, and it's really good to hear him, I guess, once a month at this point. So thanks, Frank, for doing the interviews, and keep up the good work.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. If you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Stacy Johnson and Steve Miller for their volunteer work on today's headlines. And thank you for tuning in. I've been your host, Shannon Young.